We were in the middle of discussing the concept of all Torah, that somebody who accepts upon himself the yoke of Torah, so he is exempt from earning a living, going into the army, and we began to explain this idea of is there a place in the Jewish people for people who work and learn, and people who learn all the time. And we said that basically there's an argument between Rabbi Yishmael and Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai. What's the ideal? Rabbi Yishmael says the ideal is to combine work or an earthly occupation with learning Torah. And if you do it properly, then your work time can be considered like learning. And Rav Shimon bar Yochai says, no, the ideal would be to learn all the time. And if you're doing Ratzon Hashem, you're fulfilling God's will, so then you can do that. If you're not, then you'll have to work. And if you do it, other people will support you. Okay. So last week, we explained what Osim Ritzono Shel Makom is. It's a higher level of being able to observe the Torah, different than observing the Torah, but being called Ein Osim Ritzono Shel Makom. You're not doing God's will. Both of them, the people are doing mitzvahs and not doing averis. But there's a higher level and a lower level. And basically, the higher level is where you are doing it altruistically, not doing it because you're afraid that you'll lose out if you don't do what's right, but you do what's right because it's right. You love God because it's God, not because it's good for you. And even though the level of loving God because it's good for you, or doing the Torah because it's good for you, is a very nice level. Halavai, we should be on that level, where we come to the conclusion that doing what God wants from us is good for us. Okay? But it's not the highest level. And we said there's a difference between doing God's will and doing a bunch of commands. Doing a bunch of commands, so basically you have your values, your standards, your lifestyle, but you want to do it kosher. So you fulfill a bunch of do's and don'ts, and the Torah is more like a game, serious game, but a game where you do what you're supposed to do and don't do what you're not supposed to do, and you pass, go, and collect your Olam Haba. But there's a higher level, where you're doing God's will, not just His command, meaning you understand what God's will is for your whole life, your values, your standards, your lifestyle, your character. And it's everything. It's not just a bunch of do's and don'ts. It molds your entire life. It's a higher level. We said people on the higher level not only fulfill God's will, they make God's will. They initiate God's will. The people on the lower level fulfill God's will. They do what He says. Okay. We said that that's what Rav Shimon bar Yochai said. If you're on the level of doing God's will, then you can be supported by other people. If you're not on that level, then you have to work. So we ended last week with the idea, what's the reason? Because simply, if you're not on the highest level, you won't be able to deserve that high level of being supported by other people. If you're on the high level, you'll deserve it. But there's a much more basic reason why you have to be on that level. If you remember, I quoted to you two Rambams. One where the Rambam says that somebody who thinks he's going to learn Torah and be supported from tzedakah, so he's a terrible person, he is extinguishing the light of religion, he's desecrating God's name, and he loses his share in the world to come, because he's using the Torah as a means to earn a living. And the other place the Rambam says, somebody who separates himself from all the mundane pursuits of this world, he doesn't earn a living, and he doesn't go into the army. He becomes like Levi, Shevet Levi. They're God's army, and God takes care of them. How does He take care of them? He tells the Jewish people to support them. So somebody who wants to be like a Levi and dedicate himself totally to God's service, so God will take care of him too, meaning that other people support him. So here's a person who's dedicated to learning and observing Torah exclusively, and he's supported by tzedakah, what other people give, and he's considered holy of holies. And here the Rambam says, seemingly the same person is a terrible person who loses share in the world to come. So which is it? So I found a svarno in Pirkei Avos that answers the question. He doesn't bring this contradiction, but according to what he says, the answer is very simple. It's on the Mishnah, which we didn't get to yet. Lo sase matoral is gadol bohem, velo kardum lachbor bohem. Don't make the Torah a decoration to decorate yourself with, nor an axe to dig with. Simple meaning, the way the Rambam learns for sure. Don't use the Torah to give yourself honor, like you decorate yourself with a decoration, right, to make yourself look good. If you're learning Torah for honor's sake, that's wrong. And don't use it as an axe to dig with to make money, to make a living. Torah is not meant to make a living with. Right? Using it for mundane purposes, and you're taking it and using it like an axe to dig with. Says the Svarno the following, but we do see that great tzaddikim took money for learning Torah. Dayanim, Shoftim, whatever. So the Svarno makes the following distinction. There's a hairline difference between the motivation for taking money for learning Torah. Somebody can say, look, I need to earn a living. I could be a plumber, but I hate water. I could be a doctor, but I faint at the sight of blood. I could be an accountant, but I can't add and subtract. So those are all out. But you know what? I really love learning Torah. Right? It's really exciting and fulfilling. And I really like doing it. And I heard that they pay in a kollel to learn Torah. So I think I'll make my occupation Torah learning. Something I can do, something I like to do, and I can earn a living like that. That's what the Rambam says is desecrating God's name and loses share in the world to come. Because you're taking the Torah and you're using it as an occupation. Then there's another person. He says like this, I feel that I have the wherewithal to dedicate myself totally in service of Hashem. I feel that I can benefit the Jewish people, benefit myself, right, by totally dedicating myself to the Jewish people, to Torah. There's only one problem. If I do that for more than 3 days, right, and don't earn a living, I'll starve to death. So my career as dedicating myself to Torah would be very short-lived. So I'm going to have to take money in order to fulfill my desire to dedicate myself to Torah and to the Jewish people. Where's the horse and where's the cart? If the motivation is dedication to Torah and the Rabbanu Shel Olam, and taking money is in order to enable that, that's Kodesh Kadoshim. If the motivation is I need to earn money, and Torah will be the means for me to earn money, that's Chilul Hashem, and you lose your share in the world to come. It's a very thin line between them. And a person doesn't have to be on that high level, right, where it's totally altruistic, but if he wants to get to there, right, I hope I'll get to there. Mito shelo lishma bo lishma. We say that even if right now you're not doing it l'shem shamayim, but that's your goal, then eventually you'll reach that. So you don't have to be 100% perfect. Nobody is. And you don't have to be on the... So now it explains why Rav Shimon Bar Yochai said only a person who is totally altruistic and it's his whole life can take money for learning Torah. Because then it's obvious that he's doing it with the right intention. He's not using the Torah as an occupation, but he's dedicated himself altruistically, except he's forced to take the money because he has to eat. But if you're not on that level, then there's always a danger that you're doing what's good for you. So it's good for me to earn a living. So I'll use Torah to earn a living. And I was thinking, that's why it says in the Mishnah Don't use the Torah as a decoration to decorate yourself. A Torah lishka, there's a difference between a Torah and a keser. A keser is a crown, and a Torah is a decoration. There's also a difference between an axe and a shovel. A kardum is an axe. A decker is a shovel. The Gemara says in Beitza, the normal way to dig is with a decker. Using an axe to dig is not the normal way. Should have said, velo decker lachperbo. The idea is the following. If you use the Torah like a crown, there are three crowns, crown of Torah, crown of Kahuna, crown of Malchus, and the crown of a good name. If the Torah is a crown, the crown also gives you covet, but it doesn't make the covet. It's the Torah that is the covet, and it's a king wears a crown. The crown doesn't make him a king, but a king is fit to wear a crown. A decoration decorates you. If you use the Torah like a crown, that's fine. You're a Talmud Chacham. You represent Torah, so you deserve the honor. It's the honor of Torah. So you can use the Torah as a crown, but you can't use the Torah as a decoration, as a means to get covered. If the Torah is not the means to get covered, but the covered comes, that's okay. If the Torah is not the tool to give you parnasa, then it's okay. So, but if you use the Torah as a tool to give you parnasa, it's like taking an axe and using it to dig. If you use the Torah the normal way, and because of that you'll be forced to take money to live, that's okay. But if you're going to take the Torah and turn it into an occupation, that's not okay. Now, it would seem, what is the litmus test then, if you're doing it for the money, or you're doing it altruistically? Now, you have to take money. Let's say you had a situation where you could have a kol that pays more and a kol that pays less. Which would you choose? It's not, the answer is not that if you take the kol that pays more, you're not doing it altruistically, no. Because maybe if my needs are taken care of better, I'll learn with a clearer head. So you can even take more. It's not that I'm doing the Torah for the more money. I'm doing it for the sake of Torah, but the more money will make the Torah better, because I won't have it on my head that I can't pay my bills and my children don't have what they need and whatever. Where would it be a test? If the kollel that pays less is better for your learning. Overall, with all the, take everything in consideration, this one's going to be where you learn better, but it's less money. Everything taken in consideration, the other one will give you more money, but it won't make you learn better. And the situation, where it is, what the level is, will be less learning. Then if you choose the one with the more money, obviously you're doing it for the money. But it's not always the case that if you choose the one for the more money, that you're doing it for the money. Because it could be that taking the more money will make it easier to learn Torah, better to learn Torah, whatever. One of the litmus tests is, even if you get paid for learning, what would be if somebody asked you, after you're getting paid and you can make your ends meet, they ask you to teach someone or to give a class for free? Would you do it? If the whole purpose is the money, then you have to be suspicious that if I won't do it for money, maybe I'm doing it only for the money. Again, it may be that if I start doing things for free, right, I won't be able to make ends meet. So I'm going to have to take the money still. But if you already have your ends meet, and this is something extra, and you're not willing to do it unless you get an exorbitant amount of money, then there's something to be suspicious about. Right? Especially today in America, especially, the amounts that they pay for Torah lectures is absurd. I mean, it doesn't fit what a person would do. Maybe the president of the United States, you know, or ex-president, gets paid, you know, to go on the speaker circuit. But to give Torah, where you're talking about organizations that have to raise money, tzedakah money, to exist, and they pay speakers an exorbitant amount, and sometimes I benefit from that, but it's wrong, right? They ask me a lot of times, what's your fee? I don't have a fee. I'm not selling my Torah. I said, if you have a, you want to pay somebody, you, whatever you pay other people, I'm willing to take whatever it is. But a fee, right? It sounds like, you know, I'm selling the Torah. It's not my Torah to sell, right? You want to pay, gesunter heit, right? But I can't tell you an amount, and the amount should be something that's normal, right? But there are people who demand tremendous amount, and there are places that they feel they have to pay. In my estimation, it doesn't fit the kind of pay that a regular person gets for other kinds of things. It's not proper to use tzedakah money for that. Okay, so there's a thin line between using the Torah as an occupation and taking money in order to be able to dedicate yourself to Torah.
But today, the koil is in Yerushalayim, and the koil is in America, the amount of money that they pay is not livable. Okay, so nobody's going to learn Torah to as a...
Yeah, that I always say. Anybody who says, I need to make money, so I'm going to sit in a kollel and have a... So you got to see if he's sane. Right, right. He's got to be out of his mind. What do you mean? This is right? So he must be doing it l'shem shavai.
Right now he pays $80 a week. I mean, what are you doing with $80 a week?
That's a lot. How many years ago? About 50 years ago, when I was in Kolo, I got $35 a week. I think, or maybe $35 a month. I don't remember now which one it was. It was something then. It was...
Rabbi Berkowitz's Kolo here pays very well, but there's a quid pro quo. After 3 years, you have to go chutz la'aretz and do a kirov work.
Okay.
Then you're in a dilemma, because I've seen this repeat itself. You do your 3 years there, and then you start getting job offers. You've got a family by that time. You've got 2-3 kids. You know, and you, the job offers that come from in America far exceed the offers that... Yeah. Come here, and then you're torn. Do you come back here to Israel or stay in America?
Right. Okay. I can appreciate that, right? Because I teach these people in Orla Gola, yeah. And I have a son-in-law who's in Scotland, the chaplain there. They're leaving now because they were supposed to be there 2 years and then come back to Eretz Israel. They did such a good job, the community wouldn't let them leave. So they're there 6 years. They grew tremendously there. I mean, now they're not the same people they were. He's the assistant rabbi in the shul.
Then your kids need, then the grandchildren need schools, and the schools
but
are not...
In Scotland, there is a Jewish school, but it's Jewish. There's a little bit of Limudei Kodesh, but there's goyim in the school.
Wow.
I mean, my granddaughter, I think 2 years ago, was a Shabbos mommy one Friday, and Ahmed was the Shabbos Tati. Because
wow.
they it's a good school, so they can't refuse the goyim. They had they're leaving. They're going now to England. He's going to work. And they wanted to come back to Eretz Israel. He didn't have a job. The kids are way behind, and schools here with Hebrew would have been impossible. But they wanted to come back. They wanted to be in Eretz Israel, and they wanted to be near us. But I told them, you can't come. It's like a deep sea diver. If you come up too fast, you get the bends. You can't come from Scotland to Eretz Israel. You're going to destroy the. You have to go somewhere. You have to go somewhere in between.
Now with the chinuch,
yeah. Okay.
It's what's going to be there for them.
And New York is saying they'll work on that. The people there will work on it. It's not going to change overnight, but at least there it'll be like a halfway house. So, yeah, he'll have a good job. He can save some money, come here with something, and the kids will have an in-between, so when they come here, they'll be able to be acclimated. That's what I told them. They're not very happy with that. They would rather come directly here. But you have to do it with Seichel, because if they come here and they're unsuccessful, they'll leave and they'll never come back. This way, they have a chance of staying here. So they had a pageant. Now, it's this time of year. So they had the guy in the red suit or whatever, and they had all the jingle bells or whatever. So my daughter didn't want, and my grandson is in kindergarten, so he's there. So on the one hand, she didn't want to go and be part of this, but he already knew all the songs or whatever, and it's his last thing, so she decided to go. So they had Santa. So the teacher apologized. She said, you know, what's it called? I'm sorry that we had, you know, the Santa, but it's the season or whatever. So my daughter said, look, he probably doesn't have any idea what it is. He thinks it's, you know, an old, what's it called, Rebbe with a red suit. So my grandson pipes up. He says, no, I know it's Santa. So the Maisa there, it's you're right. It's a problem. It's a problem being there. It depends where you are. If you're in a place which is really great, well, they don't need you.
My best friend's daughter's in Manhattan. She's married to one of the, they went, now the 3 years is up. And Avram's a really, and his parents are here, and my friend, in other words,
yeah,
they're all here, except, and the little girl is in the preschool of Manhattan Day School. Manhattan Day School is a good school.
Yeah.
She said it's a phenomenal school.
Right.
But it's not their hashkafa. Now she has to start first grade. So now the dilemma is come back to Eretz Yisrael. But the offers here are not nothing compared to what.
Yeah, but the cost of living there is also much greater.
What they want,
what they pay for tuition, you could live off over here just a salary. Mm-hmm. It's nothing is perfect.
It's
in either
dilemma.
Place.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it's a dilemma.
Yeah, a dilemma for sure it is. Okay, so in any case, so we've discussed now the two opinions, Rav Shimon bar Yochai and Rabbi Shmuel. So what does a person do? What's the halacha? Should a person ideally dedicate himself to learning full time and only be the evidence if it doesn't work out, so have to get a job, right? Or should he l'chatchila get a job and learn Torah, like we said, and if he does it the right way, it could be considered like learning all the time. What is the halacha? Here in Eretz Yisrael, it seems more like do like Rav Shimon bar Yochai, right? People here are encouraged to learn unless Yotzei Min HaKlal. In America, it's just the opposite, right? Most people go get a career, get a job, and a minority are learning in Kollelim, right? It's the influence of Eretz Yisrael is having a strong influence in America too. But in America, it's more like that. It's accepted. People go to college, they learn at the same time, whatever. So what is the halacha? It's interesting, the Chassam Sofer, before we get to the halacha, says just the opposite. In Chutz La'aretz, you can do like Rav Shimon bar Yochai and dedicate yourself to learning all the time. But in Eretz Yisrael, you have to work. Why? He says, because in Eretz Yisrael, the work, agriculture specifically, is a mitzvah. It's Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. So a person can't say, I'll learn Torah and not put on tefillin, right? So you can't say, well, I'll learn Torah and I won't be involved in agriculture, which is Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. So here, you have to follow Rabbi Yishmael. And in Chutz La'aretz, you can do it like a Shimon Yochai. Today, it's just the opposite. But in any case, what's the halacha? So the Gemara ends with the following. Har be'osu, k'Rabbi Yishmael v'chaveiro v'also b'yodam. A lot of people did like Rabbi Yishmael and combined learning Torah with a worldly occupation, and they were successful. And many people tried to do like Rav Shimon bar Yochai and learn completely and be supported by others, and they weren't successful. That's the end of the Gemara. Says the Brisker Rav, where do we ever find a Gemara that ends what people did and were successful? Who cares? If the halacha is you have to learn all the time, then even if nobody ever did it and was successful, that's what you have to do. And if the halacha is that you have to work, then even if nobody was successful, that's what you have to do. Well, who cares what people did and were successful? Says the Brisker Rav, that is the halacha. Harbe, the majority of Klal Yisrael, have to be people who work and learn. That's the halacha for the rabbin, for the masses. But there have to be individuals that are dedicated to Torah completely. And that is the halacha for the yochid. For Harbe, for the masses to do like Rav Shimon bar Yochai is not possible. The individuals, yes. That answers the question we started with. The Mishnah says, Rav Meir says, you must teach your child a trade. Whereas Rav Nuroi says, I'm going to forego all trades and teach my child only Torah. We said it's very nice, but it can't be an argument because Rav Meir and Rav Nuroi were the same person. His personal name was Rav Nuroi, which in Aramaic means light. And he was called Rav Meir because he enlightened the Jewish people. Now there's no question. Reb Meir, as the one who is enlightening the Jewish people, is telling the masses, you must teach your child a trade. That's the halacha for the masses. As the individual father, he said, my son, I see, is capable of dedicating himself to Torah. Him, I'm only going to teach Torah. There have to be individuals. Now, one would say, well, today, right, a majority of the boys and girls are encouraged to dedicate themselves in Kollelim, especially here in Eretz Yisrael, even in Chutz La'aretz. So what happened to this idea that the majority is one way and a minority the other way? The answer is very simple. We're not talking about the majority and minority of any one yeshiva or school or Eretz Yisrael Charedim or Chutz La'aretz Charedim. We're talking about the majority and minority of Klal Yisrael. So the 15 million Jews in the world, I would say a majority of them have no idea that they're Jewish. Bechlal. I mean, not that they don't know the Jewish at all. They don't know what Judaism is. Bechlal. Nothing. They have no connection. So we're left with a minority. From that minority of Jews who know that something to be Jewish, most of them, their concept of Judaism is distorted. Reform, conservative, unaffiliated. So now we're left with a minority of a minority that know what Judaism is at some level. The majority of them are not people who will send their children to a yeshiva gedola or a seminary because they want them to get a good career. So after elementary school, they probably send them to high school, public high school, or whatever, or at least after high school, send them to a secular college. That's the majority of those people. So we're left with a minority of a minority of a minority from which it's possible that some of them will dedicate themselves totally to Torah. So if the majority of those people don't, who's going to do it? It's not going to come from the other, from the majority, majority, majority. That does not mean that every boy and girl or young man or young woman, right, is capable of dedicating themselves to Torah and learning in a kollel full of long term, right? And a girl who's not capable of doing that, and it depends on a lot of factors. Her upbringing, right? If she was born in Rwanda, maybe, you know, she could live an austere life. If she born in the five towns, maybe a little bit more difficult, right? But that there are plenty of girls who born in the five towns who can do it. But if you can't, you can't. You have to know who you are. And a girl like that who would marry a guy who could be dedicated to Torah, right, but is going to make him miserable if he's a good husband because his wife is suffering, then you're holding him back. And a girl who's capable of living a life like that, if she marries a guy who's working, she's doing a disservice because she could taka be an eshes chayav to somebody who's learning. And she's now out of the pool. So what I tell my students is, first I tell them, look, you know, there are teacher seminaries, there are, in seminary, they tell you, and in yeshivas too, you know, the ikkar is you're supposed to sit and learn and marry somebody who's learning. I said, if all of you become teachers, or all of you marry people who are sitting and learning, it would be doing a terrible disservice to Klal Yisrael. Not everybody's cut out to be a teacher, right? And if you're not cut out to do it, and you don't really, your heart's not really in it, don't do it.
Can't do it.
Right? You're hurting the children. Right? You're not, and you're hurting yourself. You can't do something that you can't do and don't want to do. The biggest bracha is to tell a person what they can do, mm-hmm. what their potential is, right? It's a bracha. But it's also a bracha to tell somebody what they can't do. If you know somebody who has a terrible singing voice, when he sings, it's like rubbing your nails on a chalkboard. That's how bad it is. And you see, he goes to the library, and he's taking out a stack of books on how to be a chazan. Wouldn't it be a bracha to go to the person and say, it's not for you. Unless you plan to be a chazan in an institution for the deaf, you're not going to be successful, right? They'll hear you sing one time, and that's the end of it, right? So do something else. Be a pantomime. Just don't use your voice. It's not for you. It's a bracha. So, on the other hand, if we don't give these children throughout their education the feeling that there's something special about dedicating yourself to Torah, learning in a kollel, and going out and teaching and whatever, then nobody will do it. Why should they do it? So, you know, I compare it to the following. When somebody comes to convert, so we tell them, you don't have to convert. Keep your seven mitzvahs. You can remain a goy. You'll get a share in the world to come. But after they convert, we go to them and we say, look, what I told you before, that you could remain a goy, keep seven mitzvahs, and you'll get a share in the world to come. There's no purpose to convert. I had to tell you, because I had to see if you were sincere. But now that you're Jewish, I want to tell you the real truth. The real truth is that the Olam Haba that a goy gets for his seven mitzvahs is nothing compared to the Olam Haba a Jew gets for keeping the Torah. But I had to tell you that, because otherwise I wouldn't know if you're sincere. Same thing, I think somebody has to go. And after somebody decides they want to go and get a career and they want to, what's it called, work, and they're going to do it the right way, somebody has to go over to them and say, look, what we told you before, that the ideal, everybody should be sitting and learning and whatever, right? We had to tell you, because if we didn't say that, nobody would do it. So we had to make it an ideal. But now that you've chosen to be where you are, right, don't think you're a failure. That's a legitimate chelik of class. There were 12 tribes. Two of them were dedicated to Torah, Levi and Yisachar, and the other ones had occupations. So you are a legitimate member of Klal Yisrael, even though you're not, and that's not the way people look at it. They look like the people who are not learning full-time are second-class citizens. And the people who are working, unfortunately, because everybody looks at the other one the way they look at them, look at the people who are learning like parasites. I always say that the Sfarno says that the menorah represented this concept. It says that the three branches on the right and three branches on the left, and the candles, the wicks, face the middle. So the Torah describes it, El mul pnei ha-menorah yo'iru shiva saneros. Towards the pnei ha-menorah, the face of the menorah, was the middle one. And then it branched out, three branches on either side. But the menorah itself was that middle branch, middle piece. So it says that towards the middle illuminated all seven candles. It says as far as that's true. Towards the middle illuminated six candles. The middle was the middle. It didn't illuminate itself. It says as far as what it means is the following. The three branches to the right represent the people who are dedicated totally to Torah. The three branches to the left are people who have a worldly occupation and combine it with Torah. When the ones on the right look to the middle, which is God's light, and they do what they're doing, L'shem Shamayim, and the ones on the left look to the middle, and they do what they're doing, L'shem Shamayim, then the light of God emanates from all of them. I add one thing to that Sfarno. When they look to the middle, it's not only that they're looking and doing what they're doing, L'shem Shamayim. When they look to the middle, they look at each other. And when the people on the right can respect the people on the left and not consider them second-class citizens, mm-hmm. and the people on the left can respect the people on the right and not consider them parasites, they can look at each other and respect each other, then the light comes from everybody. So there is place for both people. Klal Yisrael needs people dedicated to Torah. They need people learning Torah. They need people teaching Torah. They need people who are Rabbanim. They need people who are Dayanim, right? So it's got to come from somewhere. And if it doesn't come from the minority of the minority, it's not going to come from anywhere. So we have to encourage that minority, that the majority of them should want to do this. But whether anybody can actually do it is a different story.
I would add another level to the minority-majority definition. There should be standards and tests to see who could be the Dayanim and the Rabbanim, and not okay. just everyone sitting and learning. I think just because he has a good tuchus, he'll eventually get there.
Right. Yeah. Right, okay. And tests, also, unfortunately, there are people, my Rosh Yeshiva of Gifter said there, unfortunately, people imprisoned in yeshivas. And yeshivas weren't meant to be prisons because of social pressure. That's not where they should be, right? They'd be much more productive if they were in tells. You could learn in Kola for 5 years. After that, the Rosh Yeshivas advise people, continue on, or go get a job, and you can benefit. And there are people who went out and benefit the community tremendously in the way that they do. They support Torah, they're communal leaders, right? And but if they had stayed in the Kolo, it wasn't for them. They would have totally wasted their time. So it's a very, very serious thing. And it should be, like you said, there should be people who advise. I mean, where I come from, Tells is different than Lakewood. Lakewood, spit and finish, that's it, right? But in Tells, there were rebbeim, and they advised, and they stood over the... That's become also that sitting and learning means that you don't do anything else. So anybody who goes to teach, or is a Rav, or a Rosh Yeshiva, is like on a lower level, because not sitting and learning, mm-hmm. which is absurd. Mm-hmm. The purpose of the learning is to share it, or whatever, to do something. Somebody once came to Rav Shach, I saw the story, and he said he's learning in Kolo, and he has the, so he was given an offer to teach a shir. He's capable of doing it. He was giving an offer to teach a shir. But he's not sure if he wants to do it because he won't be able to learn as much because he'll be busy. He'll have to speak to students or whatever, right, to speak to people, and he won't be able to devote all his time to learning. So Shach said, what do you think I'm doing? I said, you're here. I'm wasting my time with you, right, obviously, right? I'm not learning now. So obviously I hold that there's something to it. He asked me the question. So that's part of learning. Learning doesn't just mean not doing something else. It's if you're teaching Torah to people, that's learning. Mm-hmm. Right? Avadi, a person has to learn in order to be able to teach. Mm-hmm. If you don't learn anything, you don't have anything to give over. So the more that you learn, the bigger a person you are, the more you can be mashpia. Somebody who gives out tefillin on a street corner, right, has a very small influence. But somebody like Rav Shach, who taught thousands of students, and those students can go and teach others. And the people that are being makariv people in a very serious way, Rav Shach was involved with that. So his koach of hashpa was much greater than an individual who doesn't have that ability to influence the masses. But it's different. Everybody has their place that they can find in Klal Yisrael. And where a person fits is the menorah. It says Moshe Rabbeinu had a hard time figuring out how to make the menorah. So he threw it into the fire and it came up by itself. Similarly, people think that, you know, they're in control of making these decisions. Right? Young people. They have their whole life planned out, right? Who they're gonna marry, where they're gonna, and they don't realize that life is not like that. The Rabbanu Shel Olam many times throws people monkey wrenches or what you didn't expect. If you would have asked me, 50 years ago, right, where I'd be today, I would imagine 40 years ago, I would still be in North Miami Beach. I was the Rav there. I had a lifetime contract. That nice time. I grew up there. Why would I want to move? But the Rabbanu Shel Olam puts things into motion, and it's really not your choice. You're pushed, sometimes knocked over the head, sometimes nudged a little bit, to be where you're supposed to be. Right, so in the end, where a person ends up, right, is not really 100% his decision. There's a lot of factors that are not within a person's control that determine where he is, what he is. You know, everybody would like to have the perfect marriage, perfect children, perfect community where they live, and nothing is perfect. So, memela, people have to make accommodations. For the imperfections, and because of that, there's all different kind of factors that determine where you're going to be and what you're going to be and how you're going to be or whatever. So people our age, right, even younger, understand that. Young people don't understand that. They think that they're, you know, they've been in like an incubator, greenhouse their whole life, everything's taken care of to their best advantage usually. And Mamela, they think that life's going to go on like that, and that's not real life. So the Maisa, what's it called? Klal Yisrael needs all different kinds of people, and the Rabban Shem sees to it that people end up usually where they're supposed to end up. So that is why on the Kabbalah of all, if you kept the Torah as a yoke, not in a bad way, but it's your whole life. You're dedicated to it, right? And you don't do it just because you enjoy doing it, but you do it because you feel you have a responsibility, then you can take money for it. If you don't do it like that, it's not an all Torah. It's a nice way to earn money, right? And I'd rather do this than do something else, right? And again, somebody who feels like that has to be out of his mind anyway, right? So then you shouldn't take money. You should go get a job and fit yourself into the community in a different position. Yeah.
I had heard a while ago that when they hire somebody for a rebbe, that they'll write that it's really something else, because you shouldn't get paid for what you're doing or something, that you don't say that you're hiring them to teach, you're hiring them to sweep the floors.
Yeah, I don't know that. That's Midvar Sheker Tirchuk. What I think they're saying is the following. You don't really get paid to learn Torah. You get paid because during that time you're teaching Torah, you could have been doing something else and make a living. So they're paying you in lieu of what you could have done otherwise.
Compensation.